Let us step into our unity, into our truth of being. Let us focus on that which is calling us and stand firm in the action that it asks from us. It's an exciting time, not an easy time. It's a time of brilliance. It's a time of endings and beginnings. And it's our time. What are we going to do with it?
Hello and welcome. Here we are in a time where we are all being stretched. It's not a comfortable process. It's an initiation, personal and collective. I know that I have experienced a lot during this year, and each time wondered if I can handle more, to find myself stretched to be able to hold more. It's quite something. Even as I sit now and share this, I feel like resting after many things have come into my life at once, and yet find myself able to show up, knowing that this isn't a time to hold back. And with that, of course, being smart about where my boundaries are and what I need to resource myself, and at the same time knowing when and how I can stretch in ways that will transform me forever. Over our season break, we hosted a series of live video events. They were stunning. On this week's episode, we share excerpts from two events. The first part of the conversation is with Jyoti and Mac McCartney. The event was called Live Around the Fire, as I had this vision of us being around a fire and sharing stories, songs, and prayers. It was a stunning evening, and Nick Mulvey came and performed his new song, Begin Again. I share part of what Jyoti and Mac offered here with you, potent perspectives on this now. Then you will hear from Sally Kempton from our workshop on uncertainty, impermanence, and deep practice for radical times. This was a two-hour workshop with practice, but here we share parts of the conversation. And in particular, I choose the parts where I ask Sally about coming out of our quarantine. At the time, a month ago, some restrictions were being lifted, and here where we are now, many more are again. And so this seems like a very helpful part of the conversation to share. Mac McCartney was on episode 61. He is an international speaker, writer, and changemaker. Mentored by Indigenous people over many years, he has acquired profound and original insights into questions preoccupying many contemporary leaders. Mac seeks to inspire the emergence of the leader in each of us, the leader who will take courageous action for a better world. Championing a new story of sustainability lies at the heart of this. Mac's purpose is to touch hearts, fire imagination, and invite courageous action to better serve our world. All his work is aligned to this mission. Mac writes about his search for meaning and purpose in a culture that is captivated by values and beliefs that assault the Earth's life systems and collapse society in upon itself. As an inspirational speaker, Mac intertwines themes rarely associated with each other: the quest for meaning and purpose, organizational leadership, nature, identity, and the role of ordinary people in shaping a future fit for generations to come. I really appreciate Mac's gentle, kind, and warrior heart, and his way of connecting us to that deeper part of ourselves. Jyoti was on episode 68 and is an internationally renowned spiritual teacher. She has cultivated projects that demonstrate the ways of life that honor the earth and all peoples. As a spiritual founder of the Center for Sacred Studies, she co-founded Kayumari with spiritual communities both in America and Europe. Other projects she's helped to convene are the International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers and the Unity Concert. She's also the founder of The Fountain. Its mission is to restore an economic model that is based on reciprocity and collaboration guided by nature and the sacred. She has devoted her life to bringing unity to the planet by facilitating the development of alliances between individuals who are the guardians of Indigenous cultures and traditional medicine ways. Through this work of collaborative relationships with organizations that are focused on economic, social, and environmental solutions, Jyoti has developed Creatively Addressing the Global Challenges of Our Times. I really appreciate Jyoti's lightness and the joy that radiates from her, and her ability to take us into a story and for us to really be there with her and to open up that liminal quality inside of ourselves. Sally Kempton was our guest on episode 8 and is the teacher that I'm most connected to and supported by these days. She is one of today's most authentic spiritual teachers. She teaches devotional contemplative tantra, an approach to practice that creates a fusion of knowing and loving. Known for her ability to transmit inner experience through transformative practices and contemplation, Sally has been practicing and teaching for 40 years. A disciple of the great Indian guru, Swami Muktananda, she spent 20 years as a teaching Swami in the Saraswati order of Indian monks. In her guru's ashram, she received a traditional training in yoga philosophy and practice and became a popular teacher, deeply versed in the teachings and practices of Vedanta and Kashmir Shaivism. In 2002, Sally began teaching independently. She now offers heart-to-heart transmission in meditation and life practice through her Awakened Heart Tantra workshops, teleclasses, retreats, and trainings in applied spiritual philosophy. Her workshops and teleconference courses integrate the wisdom of traditional yoga tantra with the insights of contemporary evolutionary spirituality and cutting-edge psychology. Sally is the author of Meditation for the Love of It, a groundbreaking book on meditation, and Awakening Shakti, which is one of my favorite books that I often carry everywhere with me, that shares about the goddesses and how to awaken those qualities inside of ourselves. I experience that Sally has such an incredible power of transmission through her words and when you practice and meditate with her, and has this incredible intelligence, openness, and is supportive, really very encouraging, and really can hold that space of what it's like to be on the spiritual path. All three of these guests are so beloved to me. I really, really appreciate them. They are elders with so much experience, love, and wisdom to share. It's a true honor to know them and to learn from them. And I hope that their words touch you deeply. Welcome to The Future is Beautiful, with me, your host, Amisha Gadiali. On this show, we explore the weave between politics, spirituality, creativity, and sustainability. It's time for us to move beyond silos and into an integrated way of being. Every one of us has ideas and personal experiences to share that can lead us to a brighter future. This is the revolution. Despite the challenges we face as a global community or the pressures that we meet in our daily lives, when we stop and dare to dream, to ask ourselves the big questions and to share what we are already doing, we create the future that we wish to wake up for. That future is beautiful. Mac, can I invite you to begin? And really the question is very open, but as we're all kind of navigating this new normal and this new normal that hasn't even really been created, all of these changes and restrictions that we've been experiencing and how it's really been brought to the surface where so many of our systems have been failing us. In all of the fear and the inner turmoil and also the excitement, I wondered what your reflections are of this time, what it's been for you, and what is the wisdom that has been guiding you through this moment?
Thank you, Amisha. What I'm going to say, I don't wish to diminish in any way. It's not my intention to diminish in any way the suffering and grief that many, many people in this country and other countries have experienced, the impact of the pandemic as it swept around the world, some places more, some places less. But for me, in many ways, what's happened in this pandemic is that it's entered our world. And by our world, I mean those of us who are far more privileged and far more sort of a table in many ways laden with good food and clean water. People who have enjoyed the benefits, if you like, of this rather dysfunctional world that we've created over the last few hundred years. This time it's entered our living room, and so we're taking it rather seriously. But I wonder if we spoke to the indigenous people of, you know, various parts around our world and asked them, is it so different, when they have been falling by the hundreds of thousands of diseases spread by the same society that brought so-called civilization around the world. I wonder if the people of the Yemen and Syria have noticed it being, do you know, so very different. Do you understand what I mean? I wonder if during the time that the forest fires were raging in Australia, in other words, I would say, yes, this pandemic, and today it's this. And do we really imagine that this is the last pandemic? You know, so what of the next pandemic? Or possibly one that comes after? And beyond all of this, however frightening and traumatic this experience has been, even though the headlines no longer are speaking of it, though of course, they will soon, the whole spectrum around story and science of what is happening to our Earth as she heats up, and then an unfolding story that will, I believe, set this current experience in context and in proportion. So I feel, you know, our Mother Earth has been speaking to us now, but actually since the beginning. But let's say she's been tapping us on the shoulder. Then she tried a bucket of cold water over the head, as it were. Then she tried giving us a smart slap over the back of the hand, you know. So it goes on. Now she is roaring with fierce and profound voice. She is demanding our attention. Perhaps, because I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, perhaps we are taking notice. I say we, you know, because there have always been people who have taken notice. There have always been voices that have spoken on her behalf and tried to guide us away from the madness within which we have lived for some time. But the main bulk of our societies, the main bulk of our people, are we listening now? What will we have really learned? I do not make any assumptions on that. That what's happening is that a window of opportunity has been given us, but it's just one in thousands. So if I can go back, you know, it's 55 years since the first conversation around my family's dining table about what we were doing to the earth involving my parents and my two brothers. Every decade following has been mountains of information that has been calling us back to give, to revere and to love that which has given us life and to understand. But here in Britain anyway, and I would say in big chunks of Europe, we lost an understanding of true sacredness. And as I've written in that last book, The Children's Fire, you know, when that woman elder leant across to me and said, until the day comes that the people of your islands once again pray at the rivers and the mountains and the forests, we will always be frightened of you, for you see with dead eyes, and your madness may be all it takes to tip the scales. Now, I guess I make no apology for speaking in this rather harsh manner, because I feel that that's in the truth as I see it. What is the opportunity? The opportunity, of course, is beautiful beyond words. The opportunity is that we might actually finally fall in love with our children again and begin to take action to secure their future and indeed the children of all other beings. The opportunity is that we will raise a glass of water to our lips and understand that she is a mystery far beyond you know, anything in the way that we have treated her this last hundreds of years. We will light a candle, a little fire. I mean, when I left to come to my home, to come to Embercombe for this, we were sat around the fire outside cooking our food. My little son naked running around the garden. My elder son, you know, picking and choosing the best bits, as it were. My wife, you know, just all a lovely mess of a family. That fire was, just as this candle is, a little sun, as it were, speaking to us from beyond time, calling us back home. So we are being called back home. How will it be? Well, it's spoken to us about leadership. It has spoken to us about, you know, what kind of society is it that would put people with very little sense of morality or spirit in huge positions of power. We only have to look around the world to see how terrifying that is, and actually close to home as well. It speaks to us about a worldview that no longer understands that it's a privilege to be alive at this time, and that we are here to honor that privilege and to take action to leave this garden more beautiful than we found it. It speaks to us of nature and says that we are part of nature, and it has always been so, and it will always be so. But we somehow didn't think that was good enough for us. So we've stepped away, and now we speak to her like a long distance. Well, actually, we're not even a relative. We speak to her as if it's some other that exists in some other time and reality. It speaks to us about the plight of ethnic minorities in all our countries, and the disparity of wealth and privilege and opportunity, and how appalling it is that coronavirus should have affected many of those people even more, even worse. So once again, as it were, those who have more privilege somehow escape rather than the full brunt, many of them. And it, you know, it tells us about the value of our care workers, our nurses, all the people actually grow food, clean our streets, clean the toilets, do all the things that make it, speaks to us about how we treat them and value them. It raises questions, and it offers us glimpses of something truly beautiful, and really asks us whether we care enough. And it was Oren Lyons who, I read an article about Oren wrote when he said they have a prophecy with their people, which says that when the winds really begin to go crazy, when the weather goes crazy, and when we fall out of love with our children, signals, as it were, the big confrontation and the big choice that human beings will have to make. And he then later commented, we see both of those things now. Both of these things come to pass. So I'll finish now just by saying, you know, I feel this is a harsh time to be alive. But I do not walk around seeing only harshness. I witness beauty, and I wish to become more beautiful myself, if you see what I mean. I wish to grow in my gentleness and in my love of our Mother Earth, her people and all beings. And I do what I can to step in that. And I will live for as long as I can in this world, because I love it so much, doing everything that I can. So it's with joy. It's the pain of loving something that makes things so challenging. If we don't love, then we don't feel. But I do love. And I'm very, very deeply glad and privileged to be here now for a little while longer and able to do something. It's an amazing time, but I do pray and hope that in unprecedented numbers that we would just be like thrown back in our seats with amazement, begin to rise up and say we could live in a different way. We could be brave. We could lift our eyes in reverence and awe and wonder and recognition of this earth that we have been born to, and begin to live in a more beautiful way.
Thank you, Mac. Jyoti Ma, will you share with us?
Oh, it's my privilege. Thank you so much for this invitation. I'm humbled to sit at this good fire with all of you. So I really want to just get everyone, if you can, to kind of sit down and in your mind's eye, see this fire that's burning brightly in front of us, because this grandpa fire brings clarity to discussion, and it enlightens us in the walk that we're making that Max spoke so beautifully about with so much truth. So I'm sitting at this fire, and I'm immediately brought back to the teachings I've been given since I was a young woman that has brought me into my eldership and to sitting around these kind of fires with my indigenous relatives from all over the planet that have passed prophecy and spoken of these times since I can remember. And what I sit down first, and the first thing that I want to do is I want to just take a moment to honor that great grandmother, the first grandmother of them all that they say dreamed this dream into place and is still dreaming us today. I just want to take a moment and really honor that grandmother. And then as I come away from that story, I start to remember as I took this path and I began my walk, I start to remember the things that my elders told me about to prepare us for these times. They told me that we were entering this sixth extinction, that the Mother Earth had been through this five times before. So she knew how to make the walk. She knew how to get through the doorway and how to bring that part of creation that chose to follow her instruction through the keyhole into the new time. So it wasn't something we were going to have to show up and fix or change or mend. It was really something we were going to need to show up and embrace the moment for the time that we were in. My name Jyoti, it comes because I studied with a great old sage in India for many years through a process that opened me and created the vehicle of service that my life has become. And while I was there traveling, I would go all around here with India, and I would sit at the feet of many sages so I could understand more the divine world and how it crafts and assists in our existence in this creation. On the walls of these temples, there would be a clock in many of them. And what they told me was that it was the clock of how time and evolution turn itself here on planet Earth. So from 12 to 1 would be 2,500 years. From 1 to 2 would be another 2,500 years. And so it would go 26,000 years turning itself. And the very last part of that turning was called the Kali Yuga. It was the time when all that had made it through the teachings of the 26,000 years would come to its ending point. It would crumble itself down in order to move into the next 26,000-year cycle. And the first 5,000 years of that cycle would be full of brilliant light. That got me to thinking, you know. Here we are in the Kali Yuga, as they have predicted it from all those sages I sat with. And since then, the many spiritual leaders and teachers and elders that I've had the good grace to sit with and learn from. And how to connect into this moment on the earth so we can be the most helpful to her in her earning times, what they call the great turning. We're in the great turning. When I sit and I reflect about those things, and I see that as I walked up my trail, the elders came, the medicines came, a way of life landed for me and my community so that we could get prepared for this moment we're standing in right now. And the timing of it has been brilliant. Couldn't have dreamed it into place in the same way at all. But that one that's dreaming us, she dreamed us into place right now so we could sit here together around this fire and unify the diversity that we all represent inside this creation. That's the way I know it, you know. So when this moment came, there was a big happening where I met you, Amisha, for the first time in London, where they had asked me to come together and help to create the second of a 3-day flourishing diversity summit, they called it. on the third day into the delegates that were brought there, there were 27 or so of us, there would come a news to us in that beginning morning of the third day that they had taken 2.5 tons of radioactive waters from Fukushima and poured it in the ocean, and they had lit more fires in the Amazon. And all of a sudden, it was like the Mother Earth herself threw down this bolt of lightning and said, quit trying to speak to those that are not listening. You must step into this one nation for all peoples and all nations and align with my purpose. Listen to my instruction. And the first of that instruction is to reclaim your sovereignty and to restore the original caretakers to the territories. I need those sacred sites open again. And so we tried to meet throughout that day because we were all going home the next and way into the night. And they asked Loretta Afreda Bear Cook and Arena Rose and myself if we would continue on this walk to see what was Mother Earth needing from this delegation. And so we were planning a meeting in Stockholm, March the 26th through the 29th, when all of this landed. We were going there to meet some of us for the first time. New delegates from the north, from the Sami people, were coming to meet with us in that first holding in the north, because then we were supposed to go and meet in the south and call in the leaders of the south. And then we were going to go and stand on the Eagle Condor prophecy line to knock at the door. That's all we knew. We don't know any more than that still, because we're taking it one day at a time. But what we do know is that the ban on travel happened, and we took a big in-breath moment. The world unplugged herself. We watched Mother Nature settle herself down like, oh, thank you. Her air got clear. Her waters got clear. Some of her animals started to go back into the territories that they had not been seen for so many years. Mountains were seen that hadn't been seen for 100 years. She let us know what just taking a moment of pause was doing for her. For me, are we listening to that? Because she was talking very loudly to us, as Mac was talking about. She's been shouting at us most recently. Then one of the delegates out of our Aboriginal delegate out of Australia, her name is Jinky, she said she's asking us to sit in our zero points, and we must light our fires in the zero points for ourselves and our families and our communities and reclaim our sovereignty. Take a moment of self-reflection. Take a moment to feed that sacred fire at home so you can get that brightness back in you, because there is a purification that's moving across this Mother Earth. As Max said, it's just the beginning of a wave. This is not going to be a sprint. This is going to be a marathon. And we must stay strong in it. We must stay vigilant in carrying out what Mother Earth says we need and she needs to do for herself right now. And then one of our other delegates, who is an ocean chief out of Africa that lives here, likes to represent that voice of our Black nation that got brought out of their lands and into this country as slaves. And her wealth, her wisdom, so deep. She did a divining, and the instruction she got during this moment of pause that we were just all taking was that it was really time to call in the light warriors, those light workers, those light bringers that are mature in themselves, have done their homework, have cultivated themselves to the point that they can now firmly plant themselves and align with that Mother Earth original line that will bring us back to where we started in that garden that Matt was talking about. And she also said it was a time when the ancestors' hands were on this movement. They were guiding everything that was happening, all for the good benefit of everything within this creation. She also said that it was time, and I found these words so interesting, it was time to bring in the feminine militaristic strategy. And they went on to explain what that might mean. That it might mean that we needed to have that much spiritual maturity inside ourselves and that kind of determined focus and dedication to a mission for life. that we were that committed to it, because there's a great change happening on this planet. And there will be many energies. The Kogis gave us instruction a couple of years ago to prepare for these times. They said the ending is falling into the beginning, and the beginning will roll out in 2026 through those individuals and organizations and movements that are based on original principle of reciprocity, collaboration, heart, unity, and all life is sacred. Now, during these times we're in, they said you must pay attention to the ending so you can stay informed, but stay focused on that which is breaking through. And I must tell you that it is a moment of ultimate paradox. When I was at the Jung Institute studying there, I heard someone say one time, it really got my attention, that cure was in the ultimate paradox. And so we are literally in a moment of ultimate paradox. For there are those here that are holding that hard edge with those precious to them passing, being called to the other side to help with this dimension of change that we're in. There are also those that are standing on the front line serving in this process to ease what that time of change might be about. And for them and their courage, I give great thanks. And then there are some that are beginning to feel that alignment, and they're beginning to see the new construct. In fact, many of us for over 40, 50 years, if not longer, have been created or been cultivated by the divine, if you will, to bring a thread, a part of the puzzle of this time forward. And now we're all here sitting at the table to identify that puzzle and see how it's going to click, click, click together and give us where we're going to stand next. We're all carrying pieces of it. We're all that significant to what is happening here right now. Every single one of us has a significance here, or we wouldn't be here. That's for sure. Because remember, the grandmother that dreamed us all in place is still dreaming us now, and she knows each and every one of us very personally, for sure. That I know. That I know. So here we stand in this poignant moment. If we get pulled over into that which is falling down, we'll get distracted, is the way the old ones have told me. So look into your world and see where can you focus on that realignment with Mother Earth, because when she plugs us back in and we're free for a moment to make this huge global decision and choice for ourselves, it will determine how bumpy the road in front will be, no doubt about it. Can we at that moment see some of those forms that are already starting to light up and gather around those forms that are taking us through that doorway and into this new era of time? That's a big question. She's going. Can we be humble enough to listen to that which is calling us? Can we be that humble to listen to that which is calling us? Because we're part of a new story. And we're getting glimpses of it already. If you were to be real honest and take a moment to look around, you would see the glimpses of that new story presenting itself. So I come to sit with you just with around the fire with that kind of story living in me. That the fire and the elements of this planet are all converging towards the birthing of something new. They're all converging, as are we. Let us step into our unity, into our truth of being. Let us focus on that which is calling us and stand firm in the action that it asks from us. And it's an exciting time. Not an easy time. It's a time of brilliance. It's a time of endings and beginnings. And it's our time. What are we going to do with it? Thank you.
Thank you. The words that both of you have shared, they have this energy that just needs to go through the cells of the body and find its way home. It's nice to have a few breaths and a little moment for that. As we find ourselves in this point of death and rebirth happening simultaneously, the ending and the beginning, it's so messy. As Max shared, it affects those that already had less privilege. And, you know, a lot of it's anecdotal because we know the bias of the media that many of us receive. But I've heard in this country that Black and brown people are dying more of this pandemic than white people. I've heard stories that it's hitting Indigenous communities very hard in many places around the world, and even in remote parts of the Amazon. How do we hold that compassion and that presence to the destruction whilst simultaneously holding that openness to the beauty?
You know, we'll get lost if we stay in the small picture. It really, this moment really requires that we step back and see the whole system that's operating here right now. There is a whole system perspective that we started with in the garden. And as we came out into learning the fifth world of separation, it showed us the diversity we carry as well. And now that teaching is leaving us, and a unity consciousness is coming, which will require us to put back on those original lens of whole systems. If you back up, for instance, at a birth, you see the mama giving life. You see the pain that she has to sometimes embrace and move into, like a bear energy. She has to get a bear energy in order for her to have the strength to move that child out and to give life here. We're all in a big birth. And birth is not clean and pristine. It's messy. It has all kinds of emotions involved in it, depending on the mother having this birth and the history she's carried to get to this birth and the one that's helped seed that birth. The father of it all. They work together. There's something magical that happens at this doorway, something we would not have seen if we had been lost in the little detail of the birth instead of holding the magnitude of the energy of the birth. So if we can step back into looking at whole systems, I think it at least it helps me to know how to hold something. Whether I'm sitting with a woman that's birthing a child, or sitting with an elder that's going, or standing with a family that lost someone they loved because of an accident or life happens. But if I step back and I'm able to see the whole of the story inside the story, it helps me persevere and hold that compassionate space you're talking about, Amisha, that place that's not about judgment, our shame, our guilting, our wish I had of, or if we could have, or all of those things that will distract us away from the whole system. Because there is a whole system in the great turning that's taking place right now. So for me, that helps when I can hold all of it instead of just one particular part of it. Maybe Matt can add more in his wisdom.
I suppose, firstly, I'd just say, you know, it was ever so, wasn't it? Always has been like this. I'm not sure that makes it any easier, but it's always been like that. But if you come in your life to love profoundly, you know that at some point you're going to have to meet sadness, despair, grief, because it will end. It will end in the sense that if it's a person, the other person dies, you die, you separate, whatever it is. We have to meet these things. You know, I love this time of year. I used to say I love all the seasons equally, but it's not true, actually. Just not true. I adore this period of time. All right, May is something extraordinary for me. I notice that in August, I see the first signs of September, and I get that sort of sad, that feeling of, no, I don't want it. I don't want the summer to pass. And then, of course, I'm in the beauty of autumn. And so it goes on. So for me, we are tempted to retreat into fantasy in situations like this, where we seek refuge in just some fantasy that somehow makes it all feel all right, and then we don't have to deal with it. Or we go under the, our head goes under the waves, you know, possibly with the overwhelming suffering. But in the end, we need to weep for that which needs to be wept for, and we need to laugh and joy and sing and dance for that which needs celebrating. So I've said many times, a true sign of a sane person is someone who weeps and cries fairly often on, you know, in different times. Because this time is no different, you know, in the sense that suffering is enormous, and so is the joy enormous. And I think the more that we come into that, in really turn ourselves to this recognition that we are here, as it were, in service, that we were born in love, and everything that we can call ordinary is extraordinary. Walk in that way, making our prayers, holding our ceremonies, paying our bills, doing the shopping, looking after our children, attending to our older people, dealing with the fact that spring comes to an end and summer comes to an end and autumn. It's just life, you know. And so it's difficult, yes. But what is often more difficult is when we turn away from our unwillingness often to deal with the imbalances that we hold within us. So I would say the more we attend to our own healing and coming into balance, then we are able to balance far better these things which are impacting us from the outside world, rather than being overwhelmed and either lost in a fantasy of joy and ignoring the suffering, or overwhelmed with pain and forgetting that there is also beauty and joy.
Hello. We're taking a short pause from the conversation. On behalf of our team and our community, thank you for being here and co-creating The Future is Beautiful. Much dedication, love, and time goes into the production of this show. We believe in being advertising free in a world that's always trying to sell us stuff we don't need. And so we make this show with you and for you, thanks to your support. There are three ways you can be more involved, so we can share the vision, wisdom, and creativity here as we explore what it means to be a human in this time. You can support the podcast by sharing it with your friends, posting episodes on social media, and doing iTunes reviews. You can support as a patron by making a monthly or one-off donation of your choice. And with this, you join the Global Patrons Group and monthly video calls where we share connection and insight. You get to know the other amazing patrons from around the world, their stories and their work, and you offer direct support to me and the team, as well as being brought into the behind the scenes of creating something like this. It sounds like a lot, but it's as much or as little as you want to get involved in. You can become a member of Presence, our membership collective of care and practice, where we explore how to embody the themes of the podcast with workshops, calls, special events, tree whispers, and powerful tools, practices, and rituals that you can bring into your life. This is open to absolutely everybody as we create an inclusive and diverse space that celebrates well-being as a human right, where we explore together what it means to be creative, courageous, and connected to ourselves, each other, and the earth. This is about embodying sacred activism. We love meeting patrons and Presence members, and how being part in this way weaves our lives together as well as making this show possible. If anything from this conversation has moved or inspired you, please get more involved. All information can be found at www.thefutureisbeautiful.co/community. This show really can't go on without your patronage and Presence membership, so please do make it happen. And now, back to the conversation. In many, many countries, there's been quite a shift in policy and in permission and in what people are allowed to do. With that, going into this period of having all of our like freedom taken away and then being kind of at home and then having to figure out how to do all of that. And then there's sort of been time for people to kind of just get used to like what they're doing. And then suddenly now it's like, oh, actually, you can start going back to work. You can start doing this. You can start doing that. And there's a lot of anxiety about that. I liken it to when I've been in periods of deep spiritual practice and in an ashram, and then you kind of have to come back and everything's loud and gets busy and it's like, and you feel kind of sensitive and like something has changed in you. And then how do you like make sense of that? And of course, as you spent 20 years in an ashram and then you came out back into society, I figure you have something to offer us here.
Yeah, I have definitely had this experience. I went into an ashram in my late 20s, early 30s, in 1974, 75 really. When the world looked one way, I came out in 2002. The world looked completely different. So I was a little bit like Rip Van Winkle. I had to readjust to a completely different universe, politically, socially, the way finances worked. For one thing, the consensus had gone from left liberal to right-wing conservative in this country, which was a big shock to me. But what I found I had to do, because it's true, the world feels very, very pressing when you've been inside, when you've been in your own space and with your own cohort. You know, even if your family is there, even if you're not getting along with your family, you've been in a situation of enormous intimacy and hopefully been able to work on yourself. As those of us who do spiritual practice, you know, we learn to welcome opportunities, to welcome stress, to welcome at least various forms of suffering as an opportunity to work on ourselves. We all have our breaking point when it comes to suffering, but there's a lot we know how to handle due to our practice. So my question, and the question I think is really worth asking, and it's the one that I've had to deal with throughout my life in the last, you know, 30, 40 years, is how do you keep that space of inner solitude, you know, of inner center, and then walk into a world that often feels very loud and crazy and demands things of you that, you know, are not demanded in your inner meditative space, to say the least. So to me, the question really is, how do you notice when you're off center, and how do you notice the difference between how you interact when you're off center and when you're on center, and then how do you fix it? And I have a go-to practice, which pretty much everyone who's studied with me knows about, which is I have over the years kind of carved out a heart space, an energetic center, you know, in the space behind my breastbone, in the middle of the body, in what the spiritual texts call the spiritual heart or the Anahat chakra. That it's a subtle energy center, again, which many of you are familiar with. I discovered about 40 years ago that if I could actually have an experience of the energy in my heart without necessarily judging how the energy felt at that given moment, because, you know, sometimes the energy in your heart feels very sweet and loving, and sometimes it really feels hard and wounded and painful. So in order to carve out this space, you kind of have to be willing to meet heartbreak. You have to be willing to meet anxiety. You have to be willing not to judge yourself. And you have to be willing to stay there, even when it doesn't feel pleasant. And as you learn how to do that, what happens is that more and more, and I know you more and more start to experience a kind of inner room in your heart, and learn how to stay there and how to come back when you leave it. I like very simple things, even though I do a lot of experimental meditation practice. When push comes to shove, what I've found is that you have to have one go-to practice, one go-to inner refuge that is so automatic that when the shit is hitting the fan, you go there. You know to go there. So, and for me, it's been the heart. And, you know, if you ask me what I suggest, that's generally what I suggest. The other inner refuge place, which I have not done as much cultivation of, but is the space of the huddha, the center 2 to 3 inches below the navel in the very center of the belly, sort of corresponding to the Swadhisthana chakra, which is, of course, the center of consciousness that is the go-to place in the martial arts and essentially in Taoism. And both Chinese and Japanese, Asian culture tends to take refuge in the huddha, in the belly center, whereas Western spiritual culture tends to take refuge in the heart center. And Indian spiritual culture also goes to the heart. South Asia is a heart place. I don't think it really matters, but there's a difference, at least in my experience, in the emotional space that you create in the huddha and the emotional space you create in the heart. And if you're interested, we could talk some more about that, because it's actually been quite revelatory for me to explore these different centers over the years and realize how much of my experience as a human being in relationship to other human beings is militated by where I'm locating my center. I have to say that when I locate it in the head, in the center of the brain, for me, it's much less centering than the heart. And when I locate it in the huddha, in the belly center, boy, do I feel strong and powerful. Whereas in the heart, I tend to feel more open, centered in a different way, more relationally connected. The heart space feels like home. The head space, both of us having come from very intellectually centered families, as many of you have, the headspace has a lot of conditioning attached to it, a lot of judgment attached to it, as well as a lot of creativity, like all these centers. They're profound spiritual centers. So the headspace is not just about your conditioned thinking brain. It's also an open door to the higher chakras and higher worlds. If you can get past the thinking space, you know, the useless thinking space. I just read a really interesting piece of neurophysiology, which is that essentially thinking has two qualities. There's what we could call resourceful thinking, in which we use our extraordinary human cognitive capacity to solve problems, to think things through, to create, to make structures. And then there's what the neuroscientists call the default mode network thinking, which is that endless mentalogue, mostly about ourselves. You know, it's very self-absorbed, the default mode network, you know, about what's wrong with you, about how you compare to other people, about, you know, the endless replay of your past grievances and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that if you can learn to turn off the default mode network at least part of the time, then you can use the cognitive genius of the resourceful thinking apparatus creatively without getting sucked into the other part. So I thought that was really interesting as a way of helping us understand what is going on. When we're in our brilliance and when we're in our neurosis, it's usually two different cognitive networks going on.
If you're on a spiritual path, there's a kind of like, okay, like I'm growing and there's an opportunity here and this is a rising consciousness, and that's all really beautiful. But in actual fact, that manifests in like very physically uncomfortable ways. I've been very grateful for the friends that I have, and you know, we have this community presence collective that's part of The Future is Beautiful, and I've just every now and then I've just been sort of sharing like, I'm feeling like this, how's everyone else feeling? And it's been fascinating, like, that there's been creative energy at the same time for lots of people, exhaustion at the same time for lots of people, rage at the same time for lots of people, insomnia at the same time. And that part where we remember that we are all these, you know, collections of cells, and we're connected, and there's the water and the moon and the tides and all of it, and that there's a huge collective process happening, and that although everyone that is on this call is somewhere comfortable, where you have somewhere you can be quiet and light a candle and be on Zoom, But it's sort of like there's a thing that's very hard to sort of comprehend with that, that we are in such a difficult time, and yet most of us are kind of like in a kind of comfortable place, like, what, you know, that people are on Zoom calls, watching TV, like,
yeah, writing books, giving online courses, talking to our friends, dreaming new possibilities. And yeah, and one of the things that's been coming to me a lot is, what does it really mean to be interconnected, to start to actually live that tantric non-dual vision that we're all a part of each other and we're all a part of the earth? Obviously, most of us are cut off, ignorant of the actual felt experience of total connection. I think it's something that, you know, is part of the gift of the universe. We're not made to be so open that we really get how much suffering there is, you know, outside of our immediate vicinity. How do we tune into it in a way that's bearable? I mean, how do we allow ourselves to actually feel the suffering? Because I do believe that when it comes to collective suffering, that if we can allow ourselves to feel it and bless it, that our attention makes a difference. That's very subtle, and I don't mean to sound woo-woo. You know, definitely subtle feeling into our connections is not going to give checks to people who are out of work. It's not going to put food on the table. It's not going to necessarily heal people who have this terrible virus. It's not even going to necessarily change the way people who don't believe there is such a thing as the virus. But I do believe it makes a difference, and it's something we can do all the time. You know, at the same time, I just don't think that this is a time when we can opt out of actual real world activism in whatever way we're given to do that. You know, whether volunteering or taking food to elderly people in the neighborhood or giving money or in this country right now doing some political work, you know, with the upcoming elections, which are critical and unbelievably serious. I do feel like it's important to figure out where we can stand in terms of our relationship to the rest of the world. When I was young, I could never sleep unless I was in a completely quiet room that was completely dark. And at one point, and this was after I'd started spiritual practice, I was part of a big training, and I was one of the instructors, and we were sleeping. We had a group house. I was sleeping in a room with about 16 people, a couple of whom were making love in their sleeping bags around me. And it was about the most challenging, you know, situation for a person with insomnia that I had ever met. I discovered that if I could enclose myself in my sleeping bag and put in earplugs and a mask, that it was fine, that the presence of all those people with all of their different thought forms and, you know, voices and everything was, I could deal with it as long as I had my personal cocoon space. I've noticed, because I spent a lot of years as a nomad living in group situations with no privacy, not like being in a refugee camp. It was much more comfortable than that. But in many ways, like being in the kind of situation that if you were evacuated due to a wildfire or a hurricane and found yourself in a group situation, you'd have to find a way to cocoon yourself, because otherwise you just go crazy. I have found that these practices actually do that. Some of us are very comfortable, and hopefully we'll remain comfortable. Some of us can look forward to situations in which we aren't. You know, because, you know, we don't just have the pandemic, we also have climate change. I mean, we have a lot coming to us as a humanity. It's really stamina and presence and, you know, learning how to create a cocoon of goodness around ourselves. If not impregnable, at least allows us refuge. I'm sure that also means finding cohorts, you know, finding community. It's like your presence community. or friends and relatives that we can creatively work with and support each other, which I understand is one of the big things that's going on during the pandemic, is that people are creating mutual aid networks in cities. So, which is a beautiful thing. This thing creates opportunities for breaking down our barriers. But I don't think breaking down the barriers works ultimately unless you're also creating a home inside your body.
Beautiful. So I had this question around intuition as a skill at this time, and we just started talking about this a little bit before we pressed record. That's been the task that I've been given during this 2 months, is to contemplate deeply the topic of intuition, and it's the theme that we're exploring in presence. And what's been really just coming through for me is that in a world where everything is uncertain and changing and has proven itself to to not be fit for our well-being as humans and as an earth, as a living organism, that our intuition is more important than ever, because that's where the potential that we each have in order to sort of navigate what comes next comes from. And I would love to hear your reflections on intuition and the role of it right now.
Yes, and everyone should buy Amisha's book when it comes out, because you're creating a series of practices for activating intuition. So my understanding, and the understanding of the yoga texts, is that intuition is actually the natural wisdom that everyone has, which gets covered up by by all the conditioning and the thoughts we have about it and our self-doubts and our questions. Intuition that we could say is salvific, the intuition that saves us time after time, that gives us the direction, shows us the right direction in all the ways that, that it can, is called in Sanskrit Ritambara Prajna. Rita is a very old Sanskrit word which means something like the natural law of the universe. So Rita means rightness, basically. It's something like Dharma. So Ritambara Prajna is intuition that has the quality of cosmic harmony. It's the intuitions that put you in touch with the direction that reality is flowing in the best possible sense. In other words, I think what the sages meant when they talk about it is they mean intuition that takes you, for want of a better word, towards the light, towards Dharma, towards goodness. What the texts say about it is that we cultivate that through meditation and through dropping thoughts and tuning into what lies beneath thoughts. There's a practice that I really like, which since we have so little time, we won't do it. But it's Amisha's including something like it in her book. But it's a practice where you bring a question, a major question or a small question. It's sometimes good to start with small ones. Write out the question and then just write everything that your mind has to say about the question. We need to cultivate it. And it's only when you cultivate it that you start being able to tell the difference between what's sometimes called the still small voice, because it is a still small voice, at least for most of us, from all the good ideas that your mind can produce around any issues. So, yeah, intuition is probably what's going to save us. Unfortunately, we get intuition mixed up with what George W. Bush used to call my gut, which seemed to have led him into some really bad decisions.
It depends what's in your microbiome, I think.
It really does. Yeah. I mean, it's like an intuition doesn't really, it's not fully trustworthy until we have a way to clear out the detritus on the surface of the mind. We need to get beyond it. Otherwise, it's going to do what it normally does and bamboozle us once again.
Thank you to these beautiful elders for sharing their wisdom, Sally Kempton, Jyoti, and Mac McCartney. You can find out more about their work and how to connect with them through our site. They all have amazing courses, talks, books and beautiful happenings. And if you haven't already, do listen to the full episodes with them here on the podcast. If you would like to have the videos from these two events and all our other lives and workshops, you get all of this as members of Presence. Let's truly show up in the discomfort of this time with everything we have to offer and cultivate a centering inside of ourselves. Next week, we will be back with a normal style conversation. Thank you for being part of this community. Thank you for spending your precious time with us. As always, you can find links to everything we mention in this episode, download our book, and discover so much more over on the blog. We don't believe in selling you things you don't need through this podcast, and so it's made possible with you, our community. If you loved this and would like to fund our show with a monthly donation or join our online group to connect with other listeners, please visit www.thefutureisbeautiful.co and click on Community and Support. Please also share with friends, hit subscribe, and leave us a review so we can grow. Those gold stars really help others find us so these ideas can spread. Here is to us, creating a beautiful future together. The Future is Beautiful is made by an all-female team working voluntarily or on reduced rates until our listener support grows. If you have been moved by anything you heard here, please donate the equivalent of buying us a drink. All donations make a huge difference to us and will allow us to keep doing this and remain advertising free. Until next time, I leave you with this question. How will you create beauty in the world?